You're listening to Wholesaling Inc., episode number 1427.
I tell everybody, if you've done 1 through 4 right, step 5, which is the close, should be the easiest step of the entire
natural
conversation.
Progression. Yeah.
Where most people, in my opinion, mess up is they speed to an offer and they struggle at the close. Where step 1, 2, and 3, if they were to spend most of their time there, that's where the work's done.
Yeah.
This is game-changing information guaranteed to raise your real estate wholesaling business with actionable steps you can take immediately to navigate the ins and outs of wholesaling and start making money today. Join us as we put our guests in the hot seat and dive deep to dissect their strategies for success to enable you to duplicate their results. You're listening to Wholesaling Inc., the only show dedicated to making you a fortune in wholesaling.
Get ready for this podcast conversation with Eric Klein out of North Carolina. He's done over $3 million all over the phone virtually. He's only gone on one appointment. He's going to break down exactly how he has built his wholesaling business. So strap in, get ready, check this out. Eric Klein, welcome to the Wholesaling Inc. podcast.
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
So 2023.
Yeah.
What'd you close in wholesale deals? Gross income?
$3,220,000 and some change. I don't know what the change is.
And how many markets is that?
We were in North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, and Ohio.
Roughly about how many deals is that?
It was 185, I believe.
And out of those 185 deals, how many homes did you walk through, tour, sit down on the couch, you know, have a face-to-face, knee-to-knee, belly-to-belly conversation with the property owner?
One. Yeah, and I felt super awkward. I almost blew the deal.
You almost blew, of course.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because what I usually do over the phone did not work that well in person.
Right. So let's talk about that. So 184 of those property, of those property owners trusted you to buy their house over a phone call.
All of them.
How does that happen?
Real easy.
It's not that easy.
So for 14 years, that's all I've known.
Okay.
I don't do this.
Right.
So for me to jump into the wholesale industry and do it over the phone, like I knew no different.
Yeah.
I heard about people going out to houses, but that's something I knew I didn't want to do. So when I have a sales process that I go off of, and I used it in my last business, I use it in this one, and it gets people to like me, trust me, and want to do business with me. By the end of the phone call, when I make an offer, I make sure they know exactly who they're saying yes to.
Got it. And why not go to the properties? Why not get in front of these? Why not build that really solid rapport and relationship? You know, face to face.
Yeah. So in the beginning, I thought they would judge me on the way I looked. So like most people, you know, you go into an older person's house and you're sitting on the couch with an older lady.
Sure.
And I think she's not looking at my eyes. I feel she's looking at the star in the middle of my neck with an eyeball on it, wondering what the hell is this dude doing here?
Right.
So for me, in the beginning, it forced me to pick a phone up my appearance.
Yeah.
Well, I obviously, going back 14 years ago, I was insecure. Today, I am secure with what I look like.
Sure.
But I'd rather, for me, I think this is just my opinion. It's more scalable.
Yeah.
You can track your KPIs better.
Yep.
And I believe, you know, you can go much faster and harder over a telephone.
So why'd you get so many tattoos?
So a lot of them came from drunken episodes.
Got it.
But I have over 14 years clean and sober now, and I have yet to stop getting them. So now I get them sober.
Sure.
Yeah. I like them.
Is it because you've been behind a phone for how long? 13 years?
I've been behind a phone now for going
on
14.
I'm going to just get tattoos. I'm going to go bananas.
I'm going to do everything but the face.
That's it.
Yeah.
You love it.
I love it.
Okay.
And they all hurt like hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you wonder about getting a lot of tattoos, being in sales, building trust, buying houses, all these things.
Yeah.
None of that matters because you've got a process, a sales process that you use over the phone.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And so let's break that down.
I'd love to.
Right?
Yeah.
I know you would. I'd love to break it down. Because really, there's five parts to your process.
There is.
And this is something, guys, I learned about Eric through Jerry Norton's had you on his podcast or on his YouTube channel. And I loved the interview. It was a really great interview. I thought it was really, really something that we hadn't heard in wholesaling. And so I had reached out to you because we're expanding this year. We're going into different markets and we're virtual. So we have to build those skills on the phone. And you're like, listen, this is just a process.
Yep.
And so I'm learning the same way that everybody listening and watching is going to learn. So let's break down these five steps.
So I'll even take it just one step back first is when I got into this space, I realized real quick that the biggest challenge was the sea of people out there that are doing this that are not educated on sales.
Right.
So that was, for me, I said, all right, that's the biggest challenge coming into this space, which I already had my five steps from my last business model. And I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create now within this space a five-step sales process that separates me from the other phone calls to where the seller will have no other option to go, this guy's different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whether he's talking to me or one of my acquisition managers. So in the day I got on the phone and made my very first phone call, I had a 12-page script. And it was me that actually sat my butt back down in a seat and started pounding the phones where, you know, a year prior to that, I had over 100 people on the phones in my last company.
Right.
So I wanted to get my five steps for this new model seasoned before I brought somebody else on and say, hey, this works.
So you had, obviously you're working off of some blueprint, right? You're working off of something that has worked in your previous, what was the previous timeshares?
I owned the largest timeshare exit company in the US.
That's right. And you had 100 people that you had developed the scripts before, right?
Yes.
So you had experience in that.
Yes.
So what was the first script that you wrote? I mean, does it go even further back before the timeshare exit company?
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, even my script today, like I've here over the last week, I'm going to go back home and I'm going to redo my script again because there's certain word tracks in there that I could switch up to make them feel like I'm not demanding them to do something where it's a question where they feel they should do it.
Sure. You
know? So I'm always redoing my scripts. Mm-hmm. Always. It's always a work in progress.
Yeah, but why even write scripts? I mean, can't you just, you're so natural, right? I mean, you were just instantly really good at sales and you didn't have any training and you didn't have anybody around you. You were just came out like this, right?
No, I did not.
What?
No. I was, when I got on the phone for the first time, I had the worst social anxiety a person could have.
Sure.
I had very low self-esteem. I could not hold a conversation like this. So the first call center I got into, everything was scripted, where I was working for another gentleman. And I worked at that place for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
The appointment setter, they had scripts. The closers had scripts. And the reason for the script is to bring in a guy off the streets that has, you know, a good personality, maybe a good work ethic and all that, and say, hey, if you sit down and follow this script, you're going to have success here. Now, once you know that script so well and you can put your personality into it, you're going to have a lot of success. So my script is to where I can bring just about anybody that has a good attitude, is coachable, teachable, and a good work ethic. I can bring them in to TLC Homebuyers, which is my wholesaling company. And within their first 30 days of hitting the phones, I can get 3 to 5 contracts out of them.
Love it.
And then after their first 30 days, they're expected to get 8 to 10 contracts.
A month?
A month.
Holy cow.
Yep.
But writing these scripts,
let's break the five steps.
Let's do that.
Yeah, yeah. So my five steps is, one is intro.
Mm-hmm.
Two is fact find.
Mm-hmm.
Three is the pitch. That's the house. Four is your offer. Five is the close. I tell everybody, if you've done 1 through 4 right, step five, which is the close, should be the easiest step of the entire
conversation.
Natural
progression,
Where most people, in my opinion, mess up is they speed to an offer and they struggle at the close. Where step 1, 2, and 3, if they were to spend most of their time there, that's where the work's done.
Yeah.
So step one is intro, and that's where we introduce ourselves. I want to know who you are. I let you know who I am. I set clear expectations about the phone call, letting you know by the end of this phone call, one of two things are going to happen. You're either going to get an approval with an offer, or you're going to get a denial with a reason. I immediately separate myself because they go, wait, a denial?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Everyone's dying to buy my home.
Well, you separate yourself.
Yes.
Step number one, by framing the conversation.
Yes.
You said setting expectations, but that's essentially what you're doing.
Yes.
You're framing the conversation. And listen, if they don't want to be in this frame, if they don't want to go with this conversation, they're going to tell you quickly.
Yeah.
They're going to bail out real quick, and then you can move on to the next. But setting that, it is so critical that you set those expectations and really frame the call.
In the beginning.
And you do it. And what I've seen is, and it works really well, and we've done this naturally, and I was happy to see that you do this as well. As can you grab a pen and paper?
Yep.
Right
in the very beginning.
Right in the beginning.
What I want, and the reason is getting them engaged and taking them away from whatever they were doing and focusing their attention on the phone call.
Right.
Because we're calling these people out of the blue. They weren't sitting at home waiting for
us. They're driving, they're cooking, they're running around the house, they're in their backyard, they're messing around in the garage, they're doing all sorts of things. Yep. If they're not framed and really listening and almost in a studious manner, like, you know what I mean? There's something magical when pen hits paper.
Yep.
There just is.
Well, the way I look at it, when you walk into Best Buy, when you walk on a car lot, all that, everyone has a name tag.
Right.
And that's because I can look at you, I can see your name tag, and be like, ah, hey, what's going on, right? I know who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. Over the phone, what I want to do is I want to place my name tag on their kitchen table.
Sure.
And at the end of a phone call, we all, at least in my office, we're going to make an offer on that first phone call. Mm-hmm. We're not going to let them go and then call them back. The hardest part of this business is getting them on the phone. So when you have them on the phone, keep them on the phone and try to get the deal.
Right.
So when you get to step five, which we're going to go all the way through these, the last thing you want to do in this industry is make an offer to somebody to get them to sell you their house, and they have to ask you, what's your name again?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sell my house to that person.
No.
So there's a method to my madness, and everything is setting the stage for the step five, which is the dance, right? Where most people fail, and that's the close. So we're going to introduce ourselves. We're going to set clear expectations, and then we're going to have them write the information down. After we have them write our first name, last name, name of the company, website, we give them our telephone number. The only thing we ask the homeowner to repeat is the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is you can remember my name. You can remember the name of the company. You can remember the website. You might mess it up a little bit. The one thing you're not going to remember is a phone number.
Nope.
So I want to know, did they do what I asked them to do? Mm-hmm. Do I have their full attention?
Yeah.
So that would be step one. And we time, like I tell everybody, if you're doing it the right way, your intro with a little bit of fluff talk and small talk should be anywhere from a minute to a minute and a half, right?
Yeah.
Once you get past that, you have someone's attention and you've told them by the end, one of two things will happen. They've agreed to stick into the call with you now, which is amazing, right? So once you get that—
And say the line again. What's going to happen at the end of the call?
One of two things will happen. My underwriters— they're going to look at the property based off mine and your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're going, there's no right or wrong answer, right? If you don't know something, just tell me you don't know. I'm going to put TBD in here and I'm going to enter it into our system. And my underwriters will run a report to let them know what they need to know within a quarter to a half mile radius on whether what's going on in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go back there, they're going to tell me one of two things. They're going to say, yes, the property's approved. Here's what they're willing to pay based off what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, it doesn't meet their buy box and they're going to give me a reason why.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you know why they're not wanting to buy your home today. So they're willing to stick in that call, even though I told them we might not buy your house, which I want. I've said so we're doing kind of a takeaway in the beginning. And then once we do that, we jump right into step two, which is going to be the fact find. And this is what I try to, I don't hear this talked about enough. And the way I teach my process is, I try to tell people, put yourself in these seller's shoes for 30 days. If you were them for 30 days, what this industry has put them through, I'm shocked they're still answering the phone. I'm shocked they haven't changed their phone number. I'm shocked they just say, you know what? Screw a phone. I'm going to get rid of my phone and go back to the old days. Because the wholesaling industry has annihilated homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, if you can understand that when you get into one of these phone calls, and what you have to try and figure out is why they haven't clicked the little red button.
Right.
What is their interest? Because the home is access to money that ultimately is going to take care of a problem. Or the home is, there may be a tenant in there that's the biggest problem. They may be trying to get to a grandchild because she's 78 years old. She's got a illness where her timeline is ticking and she now wants to go see her granddaughter for the remaining years. You have to figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
Because that's going to help you apply that healthy pressure in the end. So the fact finding is, we try to spend, before we even talk about a house, we try and spend anywhere from 7 to 9 minutes there.
Discovery.
Discovery.
Why do they want to sell?
Why do they want to sell? Mm-hmm. And they're going to give you very surface level answers in the beginning, mm-hmm. which expect that. Expect them to maybe say, it's none of your business. Mm-hmm. Right now, again, when we call these people, their skepticism is as high as it gets. So us as acquisition managers, as closers, as professionals, as problem solvers, what we're supposed to do is take that uncertainty level and lower the uncertainty and raise the certainty, right? So the only way that's gonna happen is by having a structured conversation, asking questions that matter, mm-hmm. and getting them to understand the person on the other line, meaning me as that acquisition manager, is much different than all these other people that have called you.
And third-party stories.
Third-party. So that's where find.
Uh-huh.
So what we do...
Because I've watched these. I've watched your videos on YouTube. I think that this is truly your superpower. I mean, the tone, the experience, the enthusiasm, the scripting, great.
Yep.
It's all great.
The stories make it real.
The thing that goes, oh, bro.
It makes it real.
Every time. Yeah. I am telling you. I remember, and listen, I've talked to 45,000 property owners myself. I mean, I have been in the boiler room, so to speak, for years, from 9 to noon, making those calls. And then you start working with people and then you start seeing patterns and commonalities with a lot of the property owners that we're talking to, right? I mean, you said it. They have tenant problems. They're going through probate. That's been a vacant property. Mm-hmm. They've inherited it a long time ago. Don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
It's just they can't keep up with the property anymore and they just got to get rid of it. Like, all of these things keep cycling again and again and again and again. And when you work with one, you can explain how great of a process that was to somebody else.
Even on a home you didn't lock up under contract, you could still use the story.
Of course.
Right? It's a third party story. So when we go in, all of our leads are either sent to us from a cold call company or they're generated online. So most of them have a reason why.
Mm-hmm.
So when, let's say we get a lead from the cold call company and it says, done being a landlord. Okay, well, I'm going to go into that conversation after I do my intro and I'm going to say, hey, Mrs. Seller, it looks like they referred your property over to us because they said you're done being a landlord. Mm-hmm. That's accurate? Yeah. You know what's weird is the last 3 or 4 properties that I've personally gotten qualified here, they've all been from just retiring landlords. They're done with it.
Yeah.
The one that sticks out to me is, you know, Mrs. Smith. She had been a landlord for 25 years, had a great run.
Mm-hmm.
And she broke the cardinal rule. She rented to friends and family members. Mm-hmm. She let her granddaughter into that property, like, I don't know, it was like 3-5 years ago. And it's completely drove a wedge in between her and her granddaughter. Mm-hmm. She's not getting rent on time. She's not having the relationship she wanted. And we were able to help her not only get her granddaughter back, because the easiest solution for her was, I'm going to go to my granddaughter and say, honey, someone's buying the house. You got to be out in 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to kick her out, but she said, someone's buying the house. And not only did we help her get her granddaughter back, but she was 76 years old. And at 76, when she sold the house, she was able to take the $50,000 cash she had and pay off $17,000 in credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time at 76 years old, she was debt free. So I understand you say you don't want to be a landlord, but why?
Mm-hmm.
And then I shut up.
Mm-hmm.
I've told a story.
Do you know what the rest of the industry does? How old's the roof?
Yeah, trust me.
What kind of floors do you have?
They go right past the problem.
How old's the boiler?
Yes.
How much will you take for it?
Mm-hmm. It's crazy, man. It's so
no discovery.
None.
And people think discovery is all about the condition of the property. It's really not. It's about the reason for them to sell. And listen, a real estate lead, if you're really talking about lead generation, yes, which is the whole engine of our business,
yes,
a lead is somebody that has made the decision they're going to sell.
That is a lead.
That's a lead. I'm telling you, we're not going to convince anybody to sell their property. We're not going to do this wizardry where we're like, oh, before the interest rates do this and the economy does this and the election does this, you should sell your house and then actually stick with it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It has to already be a decision in their head. And if they've made the decision that they're going to sell their property, why?
Why? You got to figure out why. People always...
That's the difference between the amateurs and the pros.
Yes.
True. Yeah,
truly. And this industry is full of amateurs, which is okay. I was an amateur at one day, and even today, I'm still trying to get better.
Sure.
Like, I'm still trying to separate myself from the pack.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew coming in, that was going to be the biggest challenge, was these people have talked to so many amateurs.
Right.
When they pick it up, they are putting you in that same bucket until you can prove otherwise.
Right.
And
well, they have reflex no's at this point.
Yes.
They have done this. They've heard this pitch 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Or 12 times. Let's be honest. I mean, maybe 5 or 10 times.
Easy.
And they know how to put up the wall, put up the force field and just pull information from you.
Yeah.
Well, how much are you going to give me?
Mm-hmm.
No. How much you called me? How much are you going to give me?
Yep.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
So our leads come from cold callers.
Yeah.
We all know.
And PPC.
And PPC. But this
is my favorite.
I want to. It's one of my favorite. Yeah. But the reason I like cold calling leads is they have spent 3 to 5 minutes with somebody in another country.
Sure.
That everyone always says, well, how good is their English? It's good, but they're in another country.
Right.
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 They're in another country. And they spent 3 to 5 minutes with that person.
Yeah.
And they've answered very specific questions. Mm-hmm. I've never done that. I've never stayed on the phone with somebody for 3 to 5 minutes where they called me out of the blue and said, yes, I'll sell my house. Here's the how many beds, baths, the year, and yes, tell someone else to call me. I've never done that because I've never been interested in selling one of my houses.
Right.
So if you understand, if you hire a cold call company and it's on you to convert that lead,
mm-hmm.
it's on you. Cold call company did their job. They got them to raise their hand, say yes, and more than likely a timeline in that. But going back to the 5 steps,
mm-hmm.
right? Step 2.
I'm going to take this all over. This is just what I do.
Love it. I love it, man.
Yeah, but
honestly.
But I think it's really important that people understand in the discovery process, it is unbelievably powerful to have third-party stories. You know, because you take it almost out of the conversation that we're having,
yes,
and taking it to you're telling a story here, you're storytelling here,
yep,
and it involves us kind of, but not really. You know what I mean? It involves the way that we worked with this specific seller, but not really. It's more putting them in the same shoes and just seeing if it's something that clicks there, and it's not so much just battering them with question after question after question, which turns into an interrogation.
And one thing I want people to understand with third-party stories is there's a lot of third-party stories I personally haven't been through.
Right.
So if you want to do this for a long time and you want to do this at a high level, anytime I have stories, all my stories, I stick to them, mm-hmm. right? Like if I'm talking to somebody and they talk about cancer, I've never had cancer.
Right.
I always go to my wife's parents, my mother and father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately pivot to that third-party story.
Sure.
If I'm talking to a guy that's up there in age and he's 85, 95 years old, boom, my wife's grandfather right now is still living at 95. I tell that story.
Yeah.
If someone talks about if they're skeptical doing business over a telephone, I have the story of 12, 13 years ago trying to buy a dog for my daughter online and almost getting taken to the cleaners of like $1,500 through Western Union.
Mm-hmm.
I tell the same stories mm-hmm. every single time. And when you talk to enough people, you should know what story you are going to go to relate to this person.
Yep.
So just understand, you don't have to be the one that went through the situation. Use a story of someone that's close to you, a friend, a family member, or somebody that you've talked to on the telephone.
Awesome.
That's all for this episode. Your next step to success is to continue the conversation over at WholesalingInc.com by joining the mailing list, as well as get your chance to book a strategy session to learn the systems and become part of the tribe and work personally with one of our amazing coaches. We'll see you next episode with more ways to make you a fortune in wholesaling.